Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. With Bolivian President Evo Morales' plane from Moscow diverted to Austria on suspicion that Edward Snowden is aboard, and France and Portugal refusing to allow the Bolivian-bound flight to cross their airspace, we'll begin with a prominent human rights lawyer who has represented a variety of journalists and whistleblowers. Scott Horton, a professor at Columbia Law School and a contributing editor at Harper's in Legal Affairs and National Security, joins us. We'll discuss the latest twists and turns in the Edward Snowden case and the extent to which WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange now appears to speak for him. Then we will speak with a former KGB general, Oleg Kalugin, who was a longtime head of KGB operations in the United States and later a critic of the KGB and Vladimir Putin. He joins us to discuss what effect the Snowden case has had on U.S.-Russian relations and why Putin appears to be more interested in working with the Obama administration than against it, as Russia's oil-dependent economy slows and the need for Western investment in Russia's energy sector grows. Then finally, Dr. Ian Lipkin, the director of the Center of Infection and Immunity at Columbia University, joins us. He is working with an international team of scientists investigating a deadly new coronavirus, Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome, or MERS. We will discuss the outbreak in Saudi Arabia and whether MERS could be spread worldwide following the upcoming annual pilgrimage to Mecca by millions of Muslims from around the world. And joining us now is Scott Horton, a professor at Columbia Law School and a contributing editor at Harper's in Legal Affairs and National Security. He served as counsel to Andrei Sakharov and Elena Bonner, among other activists in the former Soviet Union, and serves on the American branch of the International Law Association and has represented a variety of journalists and whistleblowers. Welcome to Background Briefing, Scott Horton.
Great to be with you, Ian.
And Scott, it seems that when the president on his trip to Africa recently tried to downplay the significance of Edward Snowden and sort of suggested it wasn't a big deal, he said, "I'm not going to, scramble the jets to get a 29-year-old hacker." Well, it looks like that's exactly what he has done. I mean, the assumption would be that the United States told the French and the Portuguese to close their airspace to the presidential jet belonging to Evo Morales of Bolivia, who was leaving Moscow, where he had been attending this energy conference that Putin had put on, along with the head of Venezuela, Maduro, was at the same conference. Apparently, from my understanding, and this is sort of a breaking news story at the moment, so we're not quite clear of the details. The plane it's a Falcon jet, so it's a small jet. It was forced to land in Spain and then diverted to Austria, where it's on the runway in Vienna as we speak. So do you have any more clarity on this?
Nothing beyond what you've just said, although I have to say these events are absolutely extraordinary, and I think you're right to juxtapose this with the remarks that Obama made in Africa. I mean, we know by way of background, of course, that the Department of Defense prepared a strategy for dealing with important national security leaks. And we know right up front in the beginning of that strategy paper was the suggestion that you make the leaker into a target and you launch a massive campaign of vilification targeting the leaker. And in part, that is designed to distract public attention from the leak and focus everything instead on the person of the leaker. And I think we've seen that played out in the United States and the U.S. media in particular, the way the government has managed it. And I think here we see some what appears to be absolutely extraordinary conduct by the U.S. government, because it's simply inconceivable that France and Portugal would shut off their airspace and that a plane carrying a head of state from a summit meeting would be forced to land unless the United States had intervened aggressively and forcefully with the governments involved, bringing tremendous pressure to bear on them to act in this way. So certainly the conduct is a violation of international protocols and agreements that respect the rights of heads of state. and travel. So it's really remarkable.
And the foreign minister of Bolivia is saying it's all a lie. We don't know who invented this lie. And that the decision by France and Portugal put at risk the life of the president. So the fact of the plane is at the airport in Vienna, and you know, it's at this point, I don't know that they've gone aboard the plane. I don't know whether they can, whether it's the, you know, considered.
Well, diplomatic protocols on this point are completely clear, and that is that that aircraft carrying a head of state would be diplomatically inviolable. They would not be entitled to board it and seize people who are on without the permission of the president of Bolivia. It would be his call entirely. Of course, if it turns out that Snowden is not on board that flight, this is going to be a hugely embarrassing development for the United States and for the other governments that acted on the U.S., what we presume is a U.S. request.
Well, that's where we are now, and I'm hoping that we're looking at the wires here, at least the producers are, to find out what the latest is, because if they can't go on the plane to find out whether Snowden's on the plane, I don't know what the standoff's about. I mean, it should be established one way or the other whether he's on the plane. At this point, based upon what the Bolivians are saying, they're saying it's all a lie. So it may well be that the U.S. ends up being incredibly embarrassed. So not only are they looking like a bully, they're looking like a stupid bully.
That's right. And, you know, where does the rumor come from? Well, we know that earlier today, President Morales, in fact, gave an interview to Russia Today in which he talked about Snowden and said that he would be welcome in his country. And we know that some American reporters instantly began to focus on the fact that he was in Moscow at that point and that maybe Snowden would accompany him home. So there was speculation launched in the U.S. media immediately after his remarks.
So
one would hope certainly that there would be more than this sort of wild speculation that would have driven extreme action like this.
Well, Scott Horton, again, professor at Columbia Law School and contributing editor at Harper's in Legal Affairs and National Security, and he has also represented a variety of journalists and whistleblowers. Snowden, earlier, before this incident took place, he withdrew his asylum request to Russia, presumably based upon the remarks that, in fact, indeed, and based upon the remarks that Putin made yesterday, saying that he could stay in Russia, but he had to stop leaking information damaging to our American partners, as strange as that may sound coming from my lips, I'm quoting Putin. So what do you think happened to Snowden there? Because it's basically, and now we don't know where he is, and there's about 19 other countries he's asked for, and almost all of them have said no, except for Venezuela and Bolivia.
I'd say this has been remarkably ill-managed by Snowden. He left Hawaii, he landed in Hong Kong, and then the disclosures started in The Guardian, and then when the U.S. put out an apprehension request to the Hong Kong authorities, the Hong Kong authorities basically opened up an opportunity for him to leave immediately and helped him onto a flight to go to Russia. But if Snowden had been taking care of himself first, he would have, before any publications occurred, he would have secured a right of asylum somewhere, and he would have done that very, very quietly and would have gone to the place where he was requesting asylum and established it. And that would have happened before the disclosures got launched. So I think he's really painted himself into a corner with his rather compulsive and high-risk activities.
Well, it seems like the leader of Ecuador he's of course sheltering at the Ecuadorian embassy in London, Julian Assange. He is obviously irritated with Assange, who appeared on American television on ABC on Sunday morning, saying that that Joe Biden in his phone call to Correa had had bullied him, and Correa went public and said, "No, well, Snowden doesn't know what he's, I mean, Assange doesn't know what he's talking about. I had a cordial conversation with Vice President Biden, and nobody, you know, bullies us, you know, in Ecuador. We don't take those kind of phone calls." And he's also indicated he was irritated with Assange about getting Ecuadorian documents for Snowden to travel from Hong Kong with this WikiLeaks minder he's traveling with. So what's going on there between Correa his guest, Assange?
Well, I think Julian Assange violated the first rule of asylum, and that is that you don't embarrass or undercut your host. You have to be very, very careful in how you deal with a government that decides to accord you asylum, and you certainly don't want to publicly embarrass them, and that's exactly what Julian Assange did here. And I have to say it's odd, because I increasingly get the sense that that all of these matters surrounding Snowden are simply being stage managed by Julian Assange and his WikiLeaks organization. In fact, I look at the statement that Snowden put out just yesterday from Moscow, and this statement doesn't look like any of the prior remarks that were made by Snowden, but it looks exactly like a series of statements that have been previously made by Assange. So I'm really beginning to get the sense that Assange is speaking on his behalf now.
Well, Assange, of course, is the subject of a documentary by Alex Gibney that a lot of supporters of WikiLeaks are outraged by. But my understanding is that Gibney started out very sympathetic to Assange and wanted to basically make an homage to him, and ended up making a very critical film simply because of his experience dealing with Assange and others that I know who've made had dealings with him as well have come away with the same problem. So one always has to make a distinction between the message and the messenger. And so much of the time, you know, people trash the messenger and forget about the message. And that's what they're doing to Glenn Greenwald at the moment.
Well, I would strongly advise your listeners to take the time to see that film that Alex Gibney did, We Steal Secrets. I think it's a brilliant piece. I don't think it's a hit job at all. I do think it adopts a critical, balanced attitude towards Julian Assange and Bradley Manning and others. And I think Alex Gibney is sharply critical of the national security state and its excesses. He's sharply critical of the surveillance practices of the NSA, and he's very supportive of whistleblowers. Indeed, as a documentary filmmaker, his work has turned very heavily on cooperation with whistleblowers. I don't think he would have been able to do much of his work, including the Oscar award-winning film Taxi to the Dark Side, without whistleblowers. But he also believes that you have to have some balance, that a whistleblower, as we use that term, refers to someone who is disclosing a secret because he believes it contains information about criminal activity, fraud, abuse, or other wrongdoing, or corrupt or incompetent acts by a government actor that otherwise would not be properly investigated and addressed. That's what we call whistleblowing. And I think what we see with Assange and WikiLeaks and also Bradley Manning is that the sort of balancing and filtering that really are essential to legitimate whistleblowing isn't going on. Instead, it's just wholesale disclosure of a state's darkest secrets for purposes of embarrassing the state. That's not whistleblowing. And I think when we come to cases like Edward Snowden, I mean, it's still not clear in my mind where he stands on this divide. I mean, I from his statements about his intention, he clearly puts himself in the camp of whistleblowers. And I have to say, looking at a lot of the materials that have been disclosed so far, I think they are legitimately covered as whistleblower disclosures. But there's more to come, and I'm a little bit anxious about the way it's being handled and how it's being presented.
Well, Glenn Greenwald said on Fox News that there was going to be some real shockers coming in the future. So it seems like it's going to be sort of drip, drip, drip here. The other point being, we still don't know whether he is on this plane or not that the president of Bolivia has left Moscow on and has been diverted and. The Bolivians are outraged, and if it turns out that they are correct in saying that he's not on the plane, it's a huge lie, then whoever perpetrated this clumsy effort, this Keystone Cop effort, and muscled in on the French and the Portuguese to refuse the overflight of this plane, this is not going to play well in Latin America. This reinforces all of the sense that the U.S. is the global bully.
I think that's right. I mean, I think even if he is on the plane, it looks very heavy-handed and ridiculous. And, you know, and I have to say, I think the remarks that Obama made in Africa were correct. I mean, the U.S. shouldn't be playing it up to the media and engaging in, you know, swashbuckling international.
Right, or wheeling and dealing, as he said,
I mean, they should be using the normal, lawful processes to seek his extradition. And you got to keep in mind that what he's done is absolutely, these are political crimes. And there are dozens of people every year who disclose the secrets of the intelligence services of their country and seek asylum in other countries. In fact, the U.S. has given asylum to such people since the middle of the 19th century. And I know of several cases where it's extended asylum this very year. So that's a completely normal process. And the government on the other side has to use its, you know, political clout and arts of persuasion to get them to turn an assailant over. But normally that would only happen if the assailant agrees to return. That's what the U.S. should be focused on. So this is really, I'm afraid, sending exactly the wrong signal.
Well, Scott Horton, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Great pleasure to be with you.
Again, I've been speaking with Scott Horton, who's a professor at Columbia Law School and a contributing editor at Harper's in Legal Affairs and National Security. He served as counsel to Andrei Sakharov and Elena Bonner, among other activists in the former Soviet Union, serves on the American branch of the International Law Association, and has represented a variety of journalists and whistleblowers. In fact, there's an article about Scott Horton in the current issue of The New Yorker called Buried Secrets. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back joined by a former KGB general.
Your name is Big Brother. You say that you're watching me on the telly. See me go nowhere. Your name is Big Brother. You say that you're tired of me. You're testing me.